competition anxiety in his LTR. But the underlying reason for this venom is a pre-existing condition of dread in women that can barely be tolerated when it's under the surface, much less when it's exposed. Dread, in this context, is an innate fear of loss of security that intensifies as a woman progresses further beyond the wall, and with her diminishing capacity to reestablish that provisioning security with a new partner. In fact, it's exactly this dread that is the root source of gynocentric laws that award women cash and prizes in a divorce settlement. So powerful is this fear that legal assurances needed to be instituted to account for a woman's lessened ability to secure long-term provisioning after a failed marriage, after the wall, after pregnancies, etc. Dread, for lack of a better term, is a female condition. Although I've suggested casually returning flirtations with other women as a means to amplifying desire and illustrating social proof, this is hardly the only, or best, means of fostering competition anxiety. Overt flirtations are a blunt means of stoking this anxiety, but often all it takes is a nuanced shift in a predictable routine to trigger that imagination. The idea isn't to instill and sustain a constant terror from fear of loss, but rather to covertly, subtly demonstrate higher value, particularly when a woman's attention is straying into comfortable, routine familiarity and she begins seeking indignation and drama from other sources. Sometimes all that's necessary to provoke that imagination is to get to the gym, dress better, get a raise, travel for work, change your routine, adopt a game mentality, hang out with a new or old friend, be cocky and funny with her, risk to offend her sensibilities. Most women believe that their pussies are sufficient to hold their men in thrall for a lifetime. But as a woman's SMV declines and a man's appreciates, their confidence in this form of leverage falls off, thus forcing them to adopt new schema for controlling the fear of loss. When you head off to Las Vegas for that trade show, and your wife fucks the ever-loving shit out of you the night before you go, you're experiencing one of those new schema. It doesn't take much. Most times, the lightest touch will do. Good dread game doesn't even have to be initiated by you. Often enough, women will do it themselves, or discover sources of social proof that reaffirms your desirability. In light of this ambient fear of loss women seek to avoid, one might be tempted to use a more sympathetic approach in order to allay a woman's fears. This is hardly worth mentioning here, since this is generally the tact that most men intuitively use in their LTRs anyway. A constant reassurance of love and devotion to settle her fears. Guys like my friend John will follow a perpetual strategy of appeasement in spite of themselves. Let's be clear. The vast majority of women are secure enough not to allow this condition to get the better of them. And it's in the extreme cases I've used above that real neuroticism flourishes. Contrary to popular belief, I'm not an advocate of the dark triad methodologies of game. Not because I think they're ineffective, but rather because, with the right art of game, they're not even needed. Only in extreme cases are the dark arts to be employed. And if a situation necessitates their use, it's important for a guy to understand that a line has been crossed with a woman who necessitated their use. So yes, you should be seeking to reassure an LTR of your love and devotion. But know that due to women's intrinsic fear of security loss and the competition anxiety that comes from a declining capacity to compete with her sister's attentions, you will never achieve an ideal state of contentment of it, and certainly not by replying solely on comfort and familiarity. She wants you to rock the boat. It's what makes her feel alive. The metagame. In the starting of my blog, I'd been contemplating the last 10 or so years I've spent on So Suave. Every time I consider the things I've written for the community, I always need to put them into the perspective of where I've come from and what I've learned in that time. I reviewed a single mommy story in another forum thread, one that I learned from almost 20 years prior. I also go into how things were before the advent of the internet occasionally. I think it's really hard for a generation of young men to fully appreciate the progress that guys in their mid-30s, mid-40s, and even 50s have made in their respective times. It's hard for mid-20s and teenage guys to relate to a time before the level of communication we take for granted today. There was no term for an AFC, beta, or Herb in 1995. I didn't own a cell phone until 2002, and never texted anyone regularly until 2005. When guys in their 30s and 40s now were learning the lessons I relate in this book and on my blog, there were no forums, no PUAs, formerly anyway, and the phenomenon we call feminization and the Matrix was at the peak of its influence by virtue alone of no one questioning, let alone being aware of, its influence. We lacked the male-to-male social communication, certainly the global communication, to really bring common experiences together and form ideas from those observations. We were in the dark. Remember, no internet, and the How to Pick Up Girls books were what losers ordered by mail from an ad they saw in the back of a Hustler magazine. In fact, porn was only accessible by renting it from the back room of a VHS rental store, by magazine, or pirating the Spice Channel from cable. Good times. Now let's flash forward to 2013. I can't go a day without having Viagra or porn solicited to me in my email. Porn is now part of the utilities. It's like hot and cold running water. But moreover, so is the collected experience of literally a world of men considering the same nagging questions. Thanks to globalized, instant communications, a new generation of men can collectively consider experiences and observations that were previously left unsaid. Where before there was a stigma of not being man enough just in asking questions and seeking relevant advice about women, now it's been replaced by the community. The internet is to men what the sexual revolution was for women. The genie is now out of the bottle, and for better or worse, the information is liberating. This is the meta game. Let's consider it for a moment. Just last week, I added my voice to a chorus of other men from around the world to help out a young man struggling with his AFC problems. I joined guys from Britain, Australia, Spain, Canada, New York, Los Angeles, and anywhere in between. A global collective of men advised this kid. That's pretty powerful stuff. This is a world of men advising a young man about his situation with a girl acculturated in a world that's been influenced by women's interest for over 5 decades. This is the meta-masculine pushing back against the meta-feminized. We're now aware that this feminine matrix is everywhere. And I think we can appreciate how encompassing and pervasive it is. I know the Jezebel.coms of the world are largely the antithesis of the meta-masculine. I didn't say the mountain looked easy to climb. However, just the collectivity of the global community gives me hope. Every time we unplug a guy from the matrix, it's a group effort. We are the collective fathers these sons never had. Yes, there's differences of opinion. The community advocates, game gurus, and theorists of the world are going to lock horns over priorities and details. But the bigger picture is making men aware. The global collective waking them up is the first and best benefit. It is dirty, filthy work unplugging men from the matrix. But that's the start. If I'm optimistic about anything, it's the hope that the next generation of men will at least have the opportunity to be made aware of the code in the matrix. That simply didn't exist when I was struggling to unplug myself. By that I mean that a younger generation of men will develop at least a capacity, or at least a sensitivity to acknowledge that certain feminine social conventions exist, and were the gender roles reversed, they'd be accused of sexism. I've always felt that making these comparisons is the first real step in understanding what the matrix is. I am far more attentive to the veiled, socially excusable, feminine sexism that we casually pass off in common culture today because I realize the latent function those conventions serve. Like G.I. Joe says, knowing is half the battle. The main obstacle for the positive masculine metagame is that a majority of the same men it would serve are the unwitting, or at least willfully ignorant, pawns of the feminized metagame. I think it's wrong to think of these men, the betas, the AFCs, the plugged-in alphas, as recruits for the feminine imperative. I come to that because it takes an entire feminized society to condition a young man over the course of a lifetime to psychologically ego-invest himself in the feminine metagame as a means to achieving his best interest. They need to be raised and trained before the ego investment becomes self-propagating, at which point only extremely traumatic experiences will open his eyes to that conditioning. I use the example of a typical RAFC, recovering AFC, or seeking young man asking for advice from the collective. Almost universally, the problems they want to solve are themes so tired and so thoroughly covered by the collective of men in the community that we'll refer them to well-worn advice or rephrase old posts on the same topic. I do this myself. But think about the profundity of that for a moment. Here we have a questioning guy dealing with a problem I dealt with sometimes over 20 years ago. And men my senior dealt with 30 or even 40 years ago. The memes haven't changed much in the past 60 years. I think a common missive is to think that the only reason guys seek out the community is to get laid more or find the secret to getting their dream girl. While that's a definite motivator, so many more want solutions to relational problems that have existed in their current form for over half a century now. How do I get her back? Why did I just get LJBF'd? Why does she fuck the jerk, but tell me I'm such a great guy? Do looks matter? How do I get my LTR to bang me now that we've moved in together? There are countless others. Our meta game does a great disservice to seekers when we dismiss them as just wanting to get their lay count up. Of course, that's only the recognizable motivator. But what they're really searching for, what they're unaware they're searching for, is a real, positive confidence in a masculinity that can rise above the chatter of the invectives of feminized metagame. When I see 5 pages of advice on the SoSwap forum explaining to a noob the reasons he's in the situation he finds himself in, and instructing him how best to deal with it based on collective experiences while opening his perspective up to consider the greater landscape he's in, that is the masculine meta game pushing back. Think of that. A poor, isolated kid, frustrated by how to approach, how to deal with an LJBF, how to man up, etc. Pits the influence of a worldwide collective of men's experience against the behaviors and mindset of an individual girl who's been socialized and acculturated by the feminized imperative. That is the meta game.
Chapter 6, Part 1, Communication, The medium is the message.
I hate the term mixed signals or mixed messages. More often than not, there's nothing mixed being communicated, and rather it's a failure, willful or not, to read what a woman is communicating to a man. The average guy tends to get exactly what a woman has implied with her words, but it takes practice to read her behavior and then more practice and self-control to apply it to his own interpretation. When a woman goes from hot to cold and back again, this is the message. She's got buyer's remorse. You're not her first priority. She's deliberating between you and what she perceives as a better prospect. You were better looking when she was drunk, etc. The message isn't the what ifs. The message is her own hesitation and how her behavior manifested. 10 dates before sex? This is the message. Canceling dates? Flaking? Strong interest to weak interest? This is the message. Women with high interest level, IL, won't confuse you. When a woman wants to fuck you, she'll find a way to fuck you. If she's fluctuating between being into you and then not, put her away for a while and spin other plates. If she sorts it out for herself and pursues you, then you are still playing in your frame, and you maintain the value of your attention to her. It's when you patiently while away your time, wondering what the magic formula is that'll bring her around. That's when you lean over into her frame. You need her more than she needs you, and she will dictate the terms of her attentions. What most guys think are mixed messages or confusing behavior coming from a woman is simply due to their inability, for whatever reason, to make an accurate interpretation of why she's behaving in such a manner. Usually this boils down to a guy getting so wrapped up in a single, solitary girl that he'd rather make concessions for her behavior than see it for what it really is. In other words, it's far easier to call it mixed messages or fall back on the old chestnut of how fickle and random women are, when in fact it's simply a rationale to keep themselves on the hook, so to speak, because they lack any real, viable options with other women in their lives. A woman that has a high IL in a guy has no need, and less motivation, to engage in behaviors that would in any way compromise her status with him. Women of all ILs will shit test men, and men will pass or fail accordingly. But a test is more easily recognizable when you consider the context in which they're delivered. More often than not, women tell the complete truth with their actions. They just communicate it in a fashion that men can't or won't understand. As a behaviorist, I'm a firm believer in the psychological principle that the only way to determine genuine motivation and or intent is to observe the behavior of an individual. All one need do is compare behavior and the results of it to correlate intent. A woman will communicate vast wealths of information and truths to a man if he's only willing to accept her behavior, not exclusively her words, as the benchmark for what she's relating. He must also understand that the truth she betrays in her behavior is often not what he wants to accept. We get frustrated because women communicate differently than we do. Women communicate covertly. Men communicate overtly. Men convey information. Women convey feeling. In relating information, men prioritize content. Women prioritize context. One of the great obfuscations fostered by feminization in the last quarter century is this expectation that women are every bit as rational and inclined to analytical problem-solving as men. This is the result of an equalist mentality that misguides men into believing that women communicate no differently than men. That's not to discount women as proficient problem-solvers in their own right, but it flies in the face of how women set about a specifically feminine form of communication. scientific study after study illustrating the natural capacity women have for exceptionally complex forms of communication, to the point of proving their neural pathways are wired differently, are flags proudly waved by a feminized media as proof of women's innate merit. Yet as men, we are expected to accept that she means what she says, and she says what she means. While more than a few women like to wear this as a badge of some kind of superiority, it doesn't necessarily mean that what they communicate is more important, or how they communicate is more efficient. Just that they have a greater capacity to understand nuances of communication than do men. One of the easiest illustrations of this generational gender switch is to observe the communication methods of the strong women the media portray in popular fiction today. How do we know she's a strong woman? The first cue is she communicates in an overt, information-centered, masculine manner. She communicates like a man. You don't have to be a psychic to understand women's covert communication. You need to be observant. This often requires a patience that most men simply don't have. So they write women off as duplicitous, fickle, or conniving if the name fits. Even to the men that are observant enough and take the needed mental notes to really see it going on around them, it seems very inefficient and irrational. And why wouldn't it? We're men. Our communications are generally information-based, deductive, and rational. That's men's overt communication. Blunt, to the point, solve the problem, and move on to the next. Feminine communication seems insane. It is a highly dysfunctional form of communication. To be more specific, it's a childish form of communication. This is what children do. They say one thing and do another. They throw temper tantrums. They react emotionally to everything. Yes, they do. And more often than not, they get what they're really after. Attention. Women are crazy, but it's a calculated crazy. Covert communication frustrates us every bit as much as overt communication frustrates women. Our language has no art to it for them. That's why we seem dumb or simple at best to women. We filter for information to work from, not the subtle details that make communication enjoyable for women. This is the same reason we think of feminine communication as being obfuscating, confusing, random, even when it seems they're making earnest attempts to clearly relate their intent. The difference is that our confusion and frustration is put to their ultimate use. So long as women remain unknowable, random, irrational creatures that men can't hope to understand, but can always excuse, they can operate unhindered towards their goals. Silly boy, you'll never understand women. Just give up, is exactly the MO. Once you accept this, she's earned a lifetime of get-out-of-jail-free cards. The myth of the feminine mystique and a woman's prerogative to change her mind is entirely dependent upon how adept she is in using this covert communication. Now, as men will say, evil, immoral, manipulative woman, shape up and do the right thing. Saying one thing and doing another makes you a hypocrite. And of course, this is our rational nature overtly making itself heard in exposing a woman's covert communication. An appeal to morality, that'll get her. But it doesn't. This is because women instinctively know that their sexuality is their first, best agency. And covert communication is the best method to utilize it. Appeals to morality only work in her favor, because all she need do is agree with a man's overt assessment of her, and suddenly he thinks he's getting through to her. As men, We have become so conditioned by the feminine mystique to expect a woman to be duplicitous with us that when she suddenly leans into masculine communication forms and resorts to our own overt communication method and agrees with us, it seems she's had an epiphany or a moment of clarity. Wow, this one's really special, high quality, and seems to get it. That is, so long as it suits her conditions to do so. When it doesn't, the feminine mystique is there to explain it all away. Have you ever been in a social setting, maybe a party or something, with a girlfriend or even a woman you may be dating and seemingly out of the blue she says to you privately, "Ooh, did you see that dirty look that bitch just gave me?" You were right there in her physical presence, saw the girl she was talking about. You didn't register a thing. Women's natural preference for covert communication is recognizable by as early as 5 years of age. Women prefer to fight in the psychological, whereas boys fight in the physical. Within their own peer group, little girls fight for dominance with the threat of ostracization from the group. "I'm not going to be your friend anymore if," is just as much a threat to a girl as "I'm going to punch you in the face if," is to a boy. This dynamic becomes much more complex as girls enter puberty, adolescence, and adulthood. Yet they still use the same psychological mode of combat. Their covert way of communicating this using innuendo, body language, appearance, subcommunications, gestures, etc., conveys far more information than our overt, all-on-the-table way of communicating does. It may seem more efficient to us as men, but our method doesn't satisfy the same purpose. Women enjoy the communication more than the information being transferred. It's not a problem to be solved. It's the communication that's primary. When a chump supplies her with everything all at once, we think, "Yeah, the mystery is gone. He's not a challenge anymore. Why would she be interested?" This is true. But the reason that intrigue is gone is there's no more potential for stimulating that need for communication or her imagination. Lastly, I should add that women are not above using covert communication when it serves their purposes. When a woman comes out and says something in a fashion so as to leave no margin for misinterpretation, you can bet she's been pushed to the point out of fear or sheer exasperation when her covert methods won't work. "Can't we just be friends?" is a covert rejection. "Get away from me, you creep," is an overt rejection. When a woman opts for the overt, rest assured, she's out of covert ideas. This is an easy example of this, but when a woman cries on you, screams at you, or issues an ultimatum to you, she is powerless to the point of having to come over to your way of communicating her frustration. Likewise, men can and do master the art of covert communications as well. Great politicians, military leaders, businessmen, salesmen to be sure, and of course, master PUAs all use covert communication to achieve their goals. It's incorrect to think of covert communication as dishonest or amoral, or even in a moral context. It's a means to an end, just as overt communication is a means to an end. And that end, whether decided by men or women, is what's ethical or unethical. Just get it. To be sure, relationship game or married game varies widely in application compared to the game used in single man sex life. But the foundational principles are essentially the same, as are the pitfalls. Only the risks are higher and the rewards negligible by comparison. Having experienced the ups and downs of single man sex life as well as married man sex life, I can honestly say that I've never found game more necessary than when it's within the context of marriage. I've also written volumes about the all-risk proposition of marriage for men, and women's utter inability to appreciate the all-risk sacrifices men assume in committing to marriage. So it should be obvious that under such conditions, if a man chooses to entertain a lifestyle of marriage, the only acceptable condition is that it be within his frame and his terms. And this, gentlemen, requires not only an internalized commitment to game itself, but an understanding of, and an internalization of, a much tighter game than would be necessary in single man sex life. Higher risks mean less margin for error. In your single man sex life game, you have the leisure to spin plates, drop the ones which don't produce dividends, and non-exclusively enjoy the ones who do. Though it may pain you to lose a particular girl as a result of fumbled game, or to miss the opportunity of experiencing a woman due to a failed approach or consolidation, it pales in comparison to the risk inherent in lacking the long-term game necessary to contend with women's hypergamy in the context of marriage. Dumping a girl or getting dumped when single may be an emotional ordeal for some guys, but the decay of a marriage and the financial, familial, and emotional consequences for lacking game in marriage is a punishment that will make a single man's breakup tears seem like a blessing.
Chapter 6 Continued Part 2 Tight relationship game means much more than just getting your wife to fuck you more regularly after the honeymoon. A lot of men will respond that marriage is just not worth all that contextualization of game, and they'd be right. It's all risk with negligible reward or appreciation, and the liabilities are too steep. Furthermore, there's a contingent of men who'll say that it's impossible to perpetuate the solid game necessary to assuage female hypergamy indefinitely. And they'd be right, too. If all game is a constant act for them that they feel they have to keep up forever. Some guys get mad at just the suggestion that they'd need to gain their potential wives. She should just love me for who I am. They expect to be able to drop the game, relax, and be who they are, only to have their wives progressively convert them into their imagined ideal, which really isn't the guy who tingles their vaginas. Then they find out their wives loved them for who they were. Crossover. When the lines of communication are broken between you and your wife or girlfriend, you aren't going to get a message that the lines of communication are broken. That's what the lines of communication being broken means. When she checks out of the relationship, she doesn't tell you because she's checked out of the relationship. That's what being checked out of the relationship means. I usually have to control my laughter whenever I overhear an AFC in the crab barrel parrot back the Matrix speak about how good relationships are all about communication with your girlfriend or wife. When this is coming from a single guy, I can at least partially excuse him for lack of any practicable experience. But when it comes from a married plug-in, it's just evidence of the totality of his conditioning. Most guys who tell you this are repeating what their girlfriends always told them was the most important key to a good relationship. But as with everything femme, there's always a latent purpose underneath the veneer of aphoristic truth they sell themselves. I was once at a liquor event with my usual poor girls, and during our conversations, one tells me about her guy problems with a clingy boyfriend, obviously on the down end of an SMV imbalance. It's so frustrating, Rollo. Why can't guys just get it? With a practiced but cute little wrinkle of her nose and the huff of her $5,000 tits, my girl had just indirectly revealed one of the most vexing complexities of intergender communication. Women want men to just get it. Just get it. The guy with the capacity to call a woman's bluff with a confidence that implies she is to be worthy of him rather than the other way around is the man to be competed for. Essentially, the chick speak. Chick advice phenomenon is a shit test writ large on a social scale. And even your own mother and sisters are in on it, expecting you to get it, to get the message and see the challenge for what it really is, without overtly telling you. She wants you to get it on your own, without having to be told how. That initiative and the experience needed to have had developed it makes you a man worth competing for. Women despise a man who needs to be told to be dominant, told to be confident, told to be anything they have on their list of prerequisites for their intimacy. Overtly relating this to a guy entirely defeats his credibility as a genuinely dominant male. The guy she wants to fuck is dominant because that's the way he is, instead of who she had to tell him to be. Observing the process will change it. This is the root function of every shit test ever devised by a woman. If masculinity has to be explained to a man, he's not the man for her. In my poor girl's example, we see this get it paradox from the single man sex life perspective. But due to the risk and punishments inherent to marriage, it is even more important in the married man, or LTR, sex life perspective. Many men will complain that they hate the presumption that they need to be a mind reader, and ideally women ought to just communicate overtly and directly, just as a reason-based man would communicate. The problem is that in doing so, it changes the dynamic for hypergamy. As I've stated so often, women say they want the truth, but they never want full disclosure. Hypergamy will not be pandered to and will not be negotiated with. This is why the communication is everything meme has been responsible for the demise of more relationships than anyone will ever admit. It's not that you communicate, it's what you're communicating and how you communicate it. I've counseled more men than I care to recount who sobbed from the depths of their souls, "If she'd just tell me what I have to do to make her love me, I'd do it." Not realizing that their very verbalization of that, and a belief in open, rational communication, is the very thing that's killing or killed their woman's desire for him. A cardinal truth of the universe is that genuine desire cannot be negotiated. The moment you tell your wife, your girlfriend, that you will exchange a behavior or attitude or belief or any other compromise for her desire, you fundamentally change her organic desire into obligation. What she wants, what her hypergamy wants confirmation of, can never be explicated. It can only be demonstrated. If her desire is for you to be more dominant, her telling you to be so negates the genuineness and the validity of your becoming so. Again, observing a process will change it. On a limbic level of consciousness, her innate hypergamy is aware of that truth. She wants a man who knows he needs to be dominant with her. That is the confirmation of hypergamy. Dijo sin hablar. Dijo sin hablar. Told without speaking. Communicate with your behavior. Never overtly tell a woman anything. Allow her to come to the conclusions you intend. Her imagination is the best tool in your game toolbox. Learn how to use it. This is the single greatest failing of average frustrated chumps. They vomit out everything about themselves, divulging the full truth of themselves to women in the mistaken belief that women desire that truth as a basis for qualifying for their intimacy or enduring commitment. Learn this now. Women never want full disclosure. Nothing is more self-satisfying for a woman than to think she's figured a man out based solely on her mythical feminine intuition, i.e., imagination. When you blurt out your feelings or overtly make known your optionless status, regardless of the context or the nobility of your intent, all you do is deny her this satisfaction. And like an easily distracted child, she discards you for another, more entertaining toy that holds some kind of mystery or puzzle for her to figure out. Always remember, women care less about the content of what's being communicated and more about the context, the how, of what's being communicated. Never buy the lie that good communication is the key to a good relationship without considering how and what you communicate. Women are naturally solipsistic. Your feelings aren't important to her until you make them important for her. Despite what any pop psychologist has ingrained into you, communication is not the key to success in an LTR. It's what and how it's communicated that is. It seems counterintuitive to deliberately withhold information that you think would solve whatever problem you have. Since socially instituted feminization has taken root, every touchy-feely therapist will tell you to open up and express yourself. But all that leads to is the negotiation of desire and the disingenuous obligations based on those terms. You cannot tell women anything. They must be led to your conclusion and be made to think that they are the ones coming to it with their own devices, preferably by way of her imagined feminine intuition. How you affect this is subject to your own situation with your LTR or your prospective woman, but understand that internalizing the idea that she could be made to understand your perspective indirectly is the first step in real communication. Indirect communication is the foundation of effective game. You want to be the guy who just gets it? Speak without speaking. Women would rather be objectified than idealized.
The horse's mouth.
One of the best litmus tests for how unplugged a guy truly is how he reacts to the words of his idealized woman. I briefly covered this idea in the self-righteous AFC. You see, when an AFC clings to the mental schema that make up an AFC mindset, it requires a constant need for affirmation and reinforcement, particularly in light of their glaring lack of verifiable success with women while clinging to and behaving in accordance with the mindset. AFCs are crabs in a barrel. Once one gets to the top to climb out, another drags him back in. The AFC needs other AFCs to affirm his blatantly obvious lack of success. He needs other AFCs to tell him, "Don't worry, just be yourself," or, "She's just not a quality woman because she can't see how great a guy you are." So when an AFC finally does get a second date, and then finally does get laid, it becomes the ultimate validation for his mindset. See, you just have to be a nice guy, and the right one really does come along. This is when the self-righteous phase begins, and he can begin telling his game or PUA friends that he's getting some now without all the positive masculinity claptrap. In actuality, he rationalizes away all of the conditions that lead up to him getting the girlfriend and the fundamental flaw that he's settling for a woman who'd fuck him. But this doesn't stop him from claiming a moral high ground. His long wait is over, and he's finally hit pay dirt. This need for validation of a beta game mindset is very strong for guys, particularly when you consider a lifetime of being steeped in femme-centric conditioning. When you grow up in girl world, you want to believe the idealizations of women are actually attainable. This is what makes the red pill so hard to swallow. Men truly want the fantasy, the romanticism, and love, in the context girl world presented to them for so long, to really exist for them. This is what makes believing women's individualized words rather than their globalized behaviors so seductive for men, even for men who've become self-aware in the feminine matrix. Straight from the horse's mouth. When a woman, or a man impersonating a woman, posts some self-description or personalized experience about how they conform more to this idealization than to the silly caricatures of bitter misogynists online, this triggers an internal conflict for men. Men want to believe that the exception to the rule could exist for them since it agrees with his initial social conditioning. But the learned, unplugged conditioning he's applying to see the forest for the trees and factoring in women's generalized, observable behaviors fights against this. Becoming game aware teaches men that the medium is the message. But to varying degrees, men still want to believe that women are completely self-honest, rational agents, and completely cognizant of their internal motivations. Eventually, applied behaviorism puts the truth to this deception, but it's very hard to let go of that want for an easier answer. In our plugged-in years, men rely on the same deductive pragmatism with women that we use to solve most other problems. Our problem-solving natures predispose us to identifying the elements of a problem to arrive at a solution. Even our neural wiring is designed to achieve this end. So it's literally a no-brainer to want reliable, rational data on which to base our plan to solve a problem. In this case, getting laid and receiving intimate approval from a woman. Thus, our next question is, what do women want? What women want. I can remember asking this very question uncounted times in my plugged-in teenage years. Hindsight being what it was, I can only laugh now when I read teenage guys still asking the same thing four generations later. It seems so intuitive and considerate of a woman's sensibilities. Guys think it presents the countenance that a man cares enough to create himself in her idealized image.
Women and girls naturally love to answer this question because it gives them a default authority, while at the same time feeds their attention needs. It's such a popular topic that even rom-com movies are based on the question and the zany misunderstandings that result from men's ridiculous attempts to understand the oh-so-unknowable, mysterious natures of women's true desires. Silly, silly men. The truth is much simpler. Women either lack the awareness and self-honesty to acknowledge what it is about men that women in general, not just individualized to themselves, want, or they deliberately misdirect and evade men's efforts to make deductive sense of their motivations because, in truth, they want a guy who gets it on his own without having to be told. In either case, whether due to ignorance or duplicity, the secret of the ugly, cruel truth of female hypergamy is to be protected and obfuscated as women's first priority. So important is keeping this truth from men that the feminine imperative must socialize it into women's collective psyches. One of the great threats that game theory represents to feminine primacy is revealing the truth and the atrocities that result from feminine hypergamy. What do women want? Maximized hypergamy with a man blissfully unaware of hypergamy. The perfect union of emotional investment, parental investment, and provisional investment with her hypergamous nature. However, men still want to believe that women earnestly want to communicate their intimate desires in an effort to make better men. We believe that women, the emotional, erratic, dramatic, mysterious, and romantic creatures of story, are also consistent, well-grounded pragmatists that rival men themselves and are only waiting for the man unique enough to listen to her. The more her story agrees with our mental construct of what women should want, the more we want to believe she exists. If she's convinced of the story, this is all the validation most men ever need. He got it from the source, a woman who confirmed the fantasy. Qualities of the prince.
You know, I'm not quite sure if my readership is aware of this, but I'm a prince. No, really. I'm a prince. Stop laughing. Or at least that's the expectation I've come to have others recognize in me after sifting through women's online profiles on such fantastical dating resources, such as Plenty of Whales Fish and OK You Bid Cupid. But don't think I'm such a rare bird, because amazingly enough, if you're reading this book or my blog, you're probably a prince, too. And you didn't even realize it, did you? You see, virtually all the women you encounter on these online dating resources are simply undiscovered, underappreciated jewels in the rough. They're princesses, and goddammit, they deserve to be treated as such. Just reading through each profile is like going on safari and encountering a virtual cornucopia of rare and exotic animals, kind of like a zoo, each meticulously described in encyclopedic detail of their uniqueness and rarity of finding. What mere mortal man could possibly deserve to touch such feminine refinery? A few years ago, the denizens of the SoSuave Forum accidentally conducted one of the most humorous social experiments ever performed. A member by the handle of Bonhomme was a frequenter of Plenty of Fish and noticed an interesting trend in women's profiles. Though most of the women using online dating run the gamut from hopelessly fat to two-drink fuckability, the one thing most had in common was an entirely overblown sense of self-worth to complement their grossly overrated self-impression of their sexual market value, SMV for those of you playing the home game. This is nothing shocking for unplugged men. The community has long held that social media and online buffers work in tandem to convince a woman she's 1 to 2 degrees higher on her SMV scale. What hadn't been studied up to then were the descriptors and qualifications that online women used in both their list of demands and their own self-evaluations, or the brochure of value-added features any man with common sense, see femcentric conditioning, would ever be considered a man for appreciating in a woman. The following is an actual example pulled from a typical profile. Here is a well-thought-out idea of what kind of guy I am interested in. 5'10 or taller. Lives nearby. Compassionate. Intelligent. Giving. Very attractive. Someone other than your mother or sister has said so. LOL. And in shape. Prefer self-employed. Family-oriented. Open to new spontaneous things. Likes to camp. Likes to golf. Wants children. Would be a good father and faithful husband. A gentleman. Gives me my space when I need it. Not a nerd or too sarcastic. Can take a hint. Social. Calls for no reason. Remember, sending a note or a nominal gift is romantic and necessary. Respectful. Sense of humor. And thinks the world of me. I'm not interested in anyone over 41. and anyone who makes less money than me, since I do not plan on changing the lifestyle I have grown accustomed to and hope to one day be a stay-at-home mom, and furthermore, my children will never want for anything. But of course, we'll not be spoiled brats either, LOL. You should also love animals. I am not attracted to redheads at all, LOL. Sorry. Wow. A rare find indeed. Thank heaven for the internet in providing men such a valuable resource that we might encounter so rational and strong a woman as this. This is one common example, but by far the most common self-references women made involve the word princess. I'm a princess waiting for my prince. Or, I'll admit it, I'm a princess. I just need to find a man who can appreciate that and treat me right. Well, far be it from Rollo J. Tomasi to deny these undiscovered royals their due. Quickly, I began to craft a cunning profile of my own, one which these pouting princesses would surely recognize as that of none other than the Crown Prince of Mandom. Using their own profiles, jingoisms, and idioms as a template, I established an idealized persona, one that any woman worth her equalist common sense salt would instantly be irresistible to. Here is a well-thought-out idea of what kind of gal I am interested in. 5'5 or taller, but not over 6 feet, because while I don't mind being eye-to-eye with you, I won't ever be looking up to you. Lives close enough to be at my house within 10 minutes after I make the call. Genuinely passionate, intelligent enough to be good company, sexually available, preferably insatiable, and very attractive. We're talking Jessica Alba, Kira Augustina attractive. Women with a body fat percentage higher than 8% need not apply. Must be employed, but not so well as you'll interfere with our sexual activities. Family oriented, but only after you've hit 30 to 33. Open to spontaneous sex, you know, like outdoor stuff or a surprise three-way with one of your hot girlfriends after our second martini. Likes to camp in the nude. Knows not to complain when I go play golf with clients from work. She must want children after 33 years of age, if at all, and only after she's proven to be a good mother and faithful wife. Must be a lady with class, and know when the right time is to speak and not to speak. Not a prude or bitch. Can take the first hint. Sociable. Unexpectedly texts me pictures of her wearing something new from Fredericks of Hollywood. Understands that the best gift she can give me is expressing her desire to fuck me like a wild animal. And also understands that gifts for her are treats or rewards for desired behavior. Must be respectful of my decisions being final. Can't take herself too seriously. And thinks the world of me. I'm not interested in anyone over 31, since this is most women's expiration date anyway. She cannot have exorbitant spending habits or a credit debt load in excess of $1,000, since I do not plan on changing the lifestyle I have grown accustomed to and hope to one day be able to send my own children to college rather than pay for your student debt. And furthermore, my children will be taught to reasonably earn their achievements on their own and respect the decisions of their father and mother, and absolutely will not be spoiled brats either. I'm very attracted to redheads, blondes, brunettes, Caucasians, Latinas, Asians, African Americans, Pacific Islanders, etc. Pretty much any woman that meets my physical requirements. I'm not attracted at all to even slightly fat women, no matter how much inner beauty you think you may possess. Hope to meet you soon. Your prince. There. What woman could possibly fail to appreciate all the qualities of a prince based upon their very own template? Insidious, clever, and witty. All I had to do was await what could only be a landslide of returned affection and positive responses. I contemplated how I would gently let down the poor cast of princesses who failed to meet my humble criteria as the first response came in. I read your